You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcast, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 10th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where the radical left indoctrination is on the house. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. It's free.
That's right. You don't have to give any money to Trump University to get liberally indoctrinated over here.
Just belly up to the bar, you know.
And come as you are.
It's all free. As I told Charlie Pierce when he told me today and the rest of the world that he had been blocked by Charlie Sykes.
That's amazing.
Welcome to the band.
Yeah.
but, you know, this is a lovely club. We're a little scruffy and a little low rent, but we're good storytellers. We're good company. And our pores are generous. So,
yes, that's right.
It's a good
that's
club to be in. It's a fine club to be in. And, you know, we were canceled long before cancel culture was cool. So, you know, I'm watching these people all over the internet who are bleeding, you know, their stigmata, their cancel culture stigmata, who just block the shit out of everyone who doesn't agree with them. I don't want to hear from them. Don't want to talk to them. We'll talk about that in greater depth in a little bit. But it's been a very strange week for people who think they want to be engaged in the arena of ideas and really
free
don't.
Speech to everybody, yeah. But I'm going to block everyone who's not a blue check
right.
in my personal circle of friends. Well, yes.
And I'd like to engage in the marketplace of ideas in a robust way. Really, let's talk about the history of a Republican Party. Nope. Shut up. And the thing, again, I'm repeating myself, I know. The thing that pisses me off is so many of my liberal allies are like, shh, don't. Don't talk about the past. Like, nope, sorry, I've been canceled. I don't exist, so you have no hold over me. Mm-hmm. You know who wasn't canceled this week? Joy Reid.
I am so proud of her.
I gotta say. She has her own show. She's replacing.
She's worked hard for where she is. She really has. Yeah.
She has. Somewhere in Brazil, Glenn Greenwald is seething, I'm sure. But you know what? I try when I hear about good news for people that I like. I try not to think about the people who are angry about it. I really do try to guess who's going to hate this. No, I'm just glad for the sake of it.
Well, and Chris Matthews was really nice about it on Twitter. He congratulated her and everything. And I imagine that the people who used to be on Hardball are going to have a little bit of a whiplash from not being interrupted.
Right.
But, well, you know.
We made a joke some time ago about Chris Matthews having his own cooking show where he just interrupts chefs all the time. You know, that's all he does. So tell me about this soup. What do you think about this soup? Hey, you know what? I remember eating soup with Tip O'Neill. Ha! Guess what? Oh, we're out of time. You know, you did this for 20 years. I remember a thing. This is for the olds out there, the old blog veterans, a thing called the Chris Matthews Show.
On Sundays, right?
Which back before I had cable or I lived up in the castle in Chicago, and I would watch the Sunday shows. And one of them was the Chris Matthews Show. And he would have on a wide cross-section of guests, but I just
Andrew
remember
Sullivan's.
Andrew Sullivan and David Brooks. David Brooks before he became David Brooks.
Yeah.
And they would just slag, because it was the height of hating liberals for opposing the war. And they would just slag people like us. And once again, all of them collectively would very much like if we never brought this shit up again. Again, out of luck, because pretty much bringing this shit up is what I do. So, and speaking of bringing things up that used to be in a bad place are now in a good place. Congratulations to former Fox News host Shep Smith, who will be joining CNBC.
Yeah. Speaking of cancel culture.
Yeah. Wow.
All the conservatives on Twitter who thought they were personally responsible for getting Shep Smith fired from Fox.
They're so proud.
You know? Yeah. And now do Brian Williams on MSNBC, because we get to pick the right-wing Twitter mob gets to pick who's on TV and who isn't.
That's their job. Yep.
And there was a little bit of insight on a Vanity Fair article this week about Laura Ingraham that explains a lot about her current behavior. Not that it's changed that much, but the fact that she's going all in with her white nationalism. Apparently, she believes that Trump is going to lose in November, which is not a big, you know, risky bet at this point. Vote as if he's 20 points ahead, though, everybody.
Right. That's right. Keep running hard.
But she, Laura Ingraham, wants to replace Rush Limbaugh. And the very, very, very lucrative world of right-wing hate radio on AM, you know, Rush Limbaugh's network, I'm sure it's worth a ton of money to her. You know, she doesn't have to worry about the kind of sponsor squeamishness that you do on Fox. So,
well, and these are people who are used to listening to Mark Levin. Yeah. So, you know, their brains are wired to be able to listen to Laura Ingraham, that comforting devil drill going through a plank of slate voice of hers.
It's so bad. And it's like, so bad.
And for relaxation, they relax a little. Ben Shapiro. And and I look over and like,
these guys do not have a voice for radio.
No.
They don't.
And yet, there they are. So I'm sure she'll fit right in. Rush Limbaugh, I will just say, cannot last forever. There will come a time in the future when he does not exist anymore on radio. And someone will move into that space. Because as we know, it doesn't matter what happens to Donald Trump in the fall. It matters immensely what happens with Donald Trump
to the country. It matters.
The country. Right. But that solid lump of racist, paranoid idiots is going to stay right where it is. And it will seek its own level. It will find someone who will
be its representation. It'll find a way, to blame others, to excuse their behavior, to excuse their loyalty to Trump. Mm-hmm. And as you say, they'll find a way to land on their feet and keep marching to the white nationalist drum.
And they're a market. So they already have Tucker Carlson, who they will run for president at some point in the future. And they will, anyone who can find a place as that group of bigots and imbeciles, voice, public voice, you know, the voice in their head, your show should sound like the voice in their head. And Laura Ingraham does that. She has lost all but like three of her sponsors. It's now what, the Slim Fast and My Pillow Hour. I mean, that's pretty much it.
She lost Slim Fast. That hurts a lot. Oh. It is, as I call it, the Laura Ingraham My Pillow White Power Hour. Yeah.
Well,
I think the White Power Hour, I think that's somebody at Crooks and Liars came up with that one. So let's talk for a minute about the Supreme Court, because that was the big, huge news this week.
Busy. As you know, neither of us are lawyers. Both of us were married to lawyers at one point.
Everybody get the Kurt Vonnegut reference that he just slipped in there? Okay.
Yeah,
the Supreme Court, an important distinction on this Mazars versus Trump, Trump versus Mazars case, which is the SDNY case, where it's important to recognize that this is not now Donald Trump has to give his tax returns to Cy Vance. Mazars is an international accounting firm with 40,000 employees.
Right.
And they will simply obey the court order. This is not something that they want to cost them any contempt of court violations anything. Nope.
They plan to be around in the fall and the spring.
They aren't subject to being elected or reelected. Yeah. They're just going to do what the court tells them to do.
No, honey, no. Dying on Donald Trump's tax returns is the hill that they're going to die on.
No. But at the same time, they're not going to piss off a client who would like to keep their records private until the court says, yeah, you got to fork them over.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, yes, sir. Here they are, sir. And you're done. So it's not Donald Trump turning over anything, because you know those records are going to have Sharpie pen all over them.
Oh, yeah.
This is Mazars providing a copy to the court, providing a copy to the grand jury, actually, not the prosecutor, the grand jury, to say, here is what we filed on behalf of Donald Trump. And that's...
My understanding as a non-legal professional is that, number one, the New York court is already set up and ready to go. They're looking to find pieces to fit into an indictment they already have set up and ready to go.
Sure.
So they're they're going to look for the missing Lego blocks in the actual financial filings. And, oh, here we go. This is the Russian money, Saudi money, bribe money, hooker money. Oh, here we go. That's and
or,
we're off.
Or more likely, this is the value he put on the property to the IRS, and this is the value he put on the property to the bank. Is it bank fraud or tax fraud?
Yeah. Or both.
Depends on both.
And the other thing is that, to quote your TV husband, Elie Mystal, this is only like disappointing news to people who have no idea how anything works. Mm-hmm. This is very good news. This is setting a precedent. It says that no president is above the law. If properly informed and enforced, you have to turn over your papers. This is nothing new. This is how we do things, and there's no way you're going to get around this. It did send back to Congress, you know, for a more tightly worded.
Right. Well, Congress has to follow rules in subpoenas of they have to have a legislative purpose, and that's normal.
Fine.
It's not as if Nancy Pelosi isn't going to find an emoluments clause somewhere in the Constitution that says, yeah, I get to look at the president's tax returns to make sure he's not taking bribes from Vladimir Putin. But isn't it interesting that the two Trump appointees voted against him? And, you know, it was the
deep state.
Deep state. Or Lou Dobbs now thinks the deep state extends all the way to the Supreme Court. Does it include the president who appointed those two justices?
The deep state includes everyone except Lou Dobbs and Donald Trump. Okay. Everyone else is a suspect. Everyone else is in on the conspiracy. And I'm sure that's how the little and this is the thing. When you have a long enough memory, you remember that Lou Dobbs used to just be this harmless little blob business guy who talked about the stock market and, you know, pork futures. And that was it. And that was his whole thing for years. And then the world shifted under his feet, and all the people who have no will, who have no conscience, who are just in it for the money, who saw their business model changing, went all in with Team Evil. Once the mask came off, you had two choices to make. You either get on the side of the righteous, or you hang in there because you cannot survive outside of that ecosystem. And I'm not sure became is the right word. I'm not sure if he wasn't that way all the time. And was just wearing a suit of respectability because that's how you get paid, or the other way around, that he always was this sort of milquetoast, middle of the road, you know, Chamber of Commerce Republican, until that became a poor business choice and he just decided he'd become a lunatic for money.
Well, and the business choice, as we've said before, and I appreciate the person on Twitter who pointed out that I think it was last week we called OANN OANON. The job that Lou Dobbs has now is to keep those who might drift away from Fox Business to OANN happy. And that means worshiping Donald Trump on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that it's Thomas and Alito who are now really out of the stream of normalcy on the court?
Thomas has always been just a shit, just a walking turd his entire career, with his crazy ass wife running her crazy ass wingnut lobbying firm.
Huge conflict of interest. Yeah. Not always filing all the right financial records. You know, that's corruption there. Also, the Supreme Court this week upheld the Trump administration's regulation to allow employers with religious objections to opt out of the Affordable Care Act's requirement to provide contraceptive care. Mm-hmm. 70,000 to 126,000 women could lose contraceptive coverage from their employers.
Yeah,
this is an outrage.
It is, absolutely is. And I'm sorry, but if you're gonna be that, then you're a business, and if you're a business, you should be taxed. And your tax dollars should go to providing birth control and contraceptive care for all the women that you kick off your insurance. You know, it's like finding someone reparatively who breaks some public thing, who smashes some public thing. We should take it out of your hide in taxes and turn it around and give it to the women who need it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not going to happen, but just this whole idea that you get to cite Jesus as an excuse for being cruel to your employees is so fucked up.
Well, medieval. The court and the women on the court in particular have noted in their arguments what nonsense it is that a publicly traded company would have moral objections to women having contraceptive care.
So men can't get Viagra, right? I mean,
yes, they can.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, they can. That's
shocking. You know what? I'll inform middle child, the patriarchy ain't dead yet.
It ain't dead yet.
No.
The Supreme Court made a very interesting decision on Oklahoma as well. Yeah. And it's nuanced. It had to do with a criminal case, a man who had been found guilty under state law of sex crimes and apparently sentenced to 500 years in jail, argued that no, he committed these crimes, alleged crimes, on native land.
Uh-huh.
And that argument went to, and therefore the state of Oklahoma couldn't prosecute him. That uh-huh. was the point.
Sovereign nation, yeah.
Yes. And the Supreme Court said that's right. And that the eastern half of Oklahoma pretty much is still under the treaty that Congress had in the 19th century.
Oops, oopsie.
And so now there's a whole lot of negotiation that has to go on with the tribes.
Yeah.
And it's like, going to be involve taxation. It's going to involve
the city of Tulsa,
water, the city of Tulsa. Exactly. Yeah. That these places are now subject to negotiations. And it does. It makes up about half the state of Oklahoma. That's quite a decision and good for them.
Yeah. You want to talk about Simone Biles for a bit?
Just really quickly. She's on the cover of Vogue. And it's fascinating to me. How, for someone so young, how good she is at communicating and how good she is at sort of managing her image and being positive. And she hasn't had an easy life. She's worked very, very hard to get to be the best in the world. Yeah. She's a short little lady. And that has been an advantage to her. And she talked about how people talked about my hair and they talked about my legs being too big and my hair being this way and so forth. And then she said, God gave me this body. And I guess this body is why I have so many gymnastic moves named after me. One pull quote from this interview, someone asked her, do you think we're obligated to stand up when something bad is going on in society? And the article says, the question summoned the specter of Larry Nassar, the longtime USA Gymnastics doctor who is now serving a sentence of up to 175 years for the sexual abuse of athletes, including Simone Biles. He groomed her. For 2 years and counting, Simone Biles has been trying to hold officials in her sport accountable. Personally, for me, I don't think of it as an obligation, Biles said. I think of it as an honor to speak for the less fortunate and for the voiceless. Mm-hmm. And that said something to me. So
that's how people in this country used to talk about paying their taxes.
Yeah.
First generation immigrants, especially. It's an honor to pay my taxes. I'm able to make a living in this country. I'm able to be free in this country. And it's an honor to pay taxes to keep this country proud and strong and prosperous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it wasn't theft. It wasn't slavery. It was the price of civilization. And until Republicans got their fingers into everything and wrecked everything. But it used to be that people felt honored to serve their country because they felt it was worth it.
Well, now that everyone from the Ayn Rand Society to Grover Norquist to the Catholic Church has taken a bailout from the federal government.
Yeah. The Trump family.
The Trump family. Mm-hmm. It's time for the anti-government nonsense to stop.
Yeah, you'd think so.
You'd think so,
Except I still recall and could, if I stepped away from my computer and took four large steps, I could see on your corkboard your cover from Newsweek, I think.
2009.
We're all socialists now.
We're all socialists now.
Funny how the market, the magic of the marketplace, the invisible hand of the market turns into an outstretched give me hand when the shit hits the fan
when
for
the
everybody.
Banks are desperate. Yeah. Right.
When the economy crashes, suddenly everybody's real interested in all working together to solve this problem we all have together. Right up until they get their head above water. And then it's like, you know what? I bootstrapped my ass out of this pool all by myself, and you should too. And
And there's no bigger example today of hypocrisy than Vice President Mike Pence.
Really?
Who said schools need to reopen because nutrition.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't feed people.
School lunches,
First of all, the government handout is what you're talking about. Government handouts for poor children.
How many school lunch programs have been cut under Republican rule? Yeah.
Right and left. My X was deep into that, and it was just appalling to watch them target the poorest and most powerless among us with every kind of deprivation you could imagine. Poor children being the easiest target, therefore the ones Republicans like to kick the hardest. But yeah, if you would like to feed children, there's a way to do it. It's by feeding children. And there's lots of ways to do it, but this whole arcane bullshit argument that you got to get them crammed into school shoulder to shoulder during the middle of a pandemic, 7 hours a day, so you can give them, I don't know, spaghetti and chips is nuts.
As a vegetable nuts. With ketchup. Yeah. Yes,
no,
right.
No, and I mean, there are people in our community who are doing deliveries to people's homes for kids who are in school.
You help them out. Yeah.
And I pressed a couple of our youngsters in this home into service who were extremely helpful. I couldn't have done it without them. But 120 families got fed that day thanks to this organization. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason in the world you just couldn't keep doing that if you really want to feed school kids. It's logistically very, very doable. Schools have kitchens where meals can be prepared. It's not impossible. It's not even that hard. It just requires someone who's not a filthy liar who's using hungry children to try to pry the government, get the government to pry schools open so that his boss can get reelected.
Asshole Republican can get reelected. Yeah. All right. So you promised me.
I did.
An essay today.
I did.
A thematic essay, including.
Yes.
He promised, folks. He said, no. I know I'm going to talk about Andrew Sullivan, David Brooks, Charlie Sykes, and Bret Stephens, but I promise you, darling.
Yes.
It's thematic.
And
so here comes the Drift Glass rant on Andrew Sullivan, David Brooks, Charlie Sykes, and Bret Stevens.
Jesus, that's way too much of a... Thematically
speaking.
I will never live up to that setup. This was the week...
This is the lifeboat, right?
Yeah.
This is the lifeboat crew.
Yeah, this is the lifeboat crew who all have long and deeply held histories that they are in complete denial about. this was the week that Harper's ran an open letter from a whole bunch of people, some of whom I respect a lot, and many of whom I just scratch my head and go, really? About the importance of freedom of speech and people not being intimidated out of their opinions and how everyone, let 1,000 opinion flowers bloom, which if actually the world worked that way, that'd be great. But that is not the way the world works. There are lots and lots of people who have important positions, opinion-making positions, agenda-setting positions in the media because they were given those positions by the corporations that work for them. And those people are simply fucking terrible at it. They are wrong all the time. They've been wrong for decades. They have shitty opinions. And there is no countervailing force in the marketplace to push back at them. And those people are the ones who are threatened by this idea that there's a rising generation. I'm not sure age is the correct metaphor, but there's a rising group of people who want those people to shut up or step out of the way or back off or have to answer for what they've done. And the ancien regime feels incredibly threatened by the fact that there's all these people who are now asking them to be held accountable for the shit they've said and done. And they don't want that. So they retreat behind this ridiculous argument that, every artist, every expression, every opinion, there shouldn't be any professional consequences. Well, look, you know what? Here's the thing. This used to be called, before it was cancel culture, it was just called at-will employment. I've been fired from lots of jobs where I was doing an excellent job for political reasons, for disagreements with management over moral issues, for budget cuts, even though the people who they kept were minimally competent at best and massively incompetent at worst. So I used to have this conversation with younger employees. My ex and I would drive them home after work and more than once. They were just shocked that thus and so got fired for no reason. And we're like, yeah, well, you just can't fire someone for no reason. Like, yeah, you can. Millions of people in this country are fired every year for no goddamn good reason. Tens of thousands of reporters, real honest to God journalists, have been sacked while parasites like David Brooks and Bret Stephens keep their job. That's not the 1,000 opinions blooming. That is a corporate decision to keep people who protect the corporate bottom line and the corporate party line from any professional accountability. That's why these people can go on shows and talk to each other and lecture each other and never risk anyone like me in the audience asking them any inconvenient questions about the shit they said last week or last month or last year, which all turned out to be wrong. They want to be protected. They want a cartel. They want an embargo on people criticizing them because it's bad for their bottom line. They really do feel that they should not be criticized. Or if they are, it should be that kind of genteel, well, we're all friends here. Like Mark Shields shaking his jowls at his good friend David Brooks on Fridays and going, you know, my good friend David and I go way back and I just have this slight disagreement with him. No, we need people who are willing to run into the arena with a sword in each hand and take on these people directly. And that is exactly what the Beltway media does not want to happen, because all these people, their arguments would fall apart in a half a minute. So, for example, today, Mr. David Brooks wrote an entire article about what ails our society when he talking about liberalism. And liberalism is this and liberalism is that. And you go, I'm a liberal. I believe in liberalism, classic liberalism. And he gets all of the liberalism part wrong. All of it. Just completely wrong. And then he goes on to say what the cure to the ills of liberalism is personism. And then he goes on to explain what the fuck that is. And I'm going, you know what? You wrote an entire column about why this country is screwed up and you never mentioned the Republican Party once. Wow. And you never mentioned conservatism once. You know what? David Brooks just canceled Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Newt Gingrich and Laura Ingraham and the entire history of his political party and his ideological movement because it's inconvenient for him to factor those things in. And if there were any justice in the universe, there would be someone sitting next to him in the virtual world challenging him every time he pulls this shit. But it's important to the Sulzberger family and the New York Times that David Brooks is never challenged, that no one ever asks him any inconvenient questions. This week was the week that Bret Stephens decided that he would continue getting paid, of course, by the New York Times. So this is not the cancel. So my notes to myself are, this is not the cancel culture I was promised. Because Bret Stephens still has a goddamn job. And Bret Stephens this week wrote an article which basically says, sure, Trump is bad, but, and here's the quote, the more serious problem today comes from the left, from liberal elites who, when tested, lack the courage of their liberal convictions, from so-called progressives whose core convictions were never liberal to begin with, from administrative types at nonprofits and corporations who, with only vague convictions of their own, don't want to be on the wrong side of a PR headache. That is bullshit. Top to mm-hmm. bottom, side to side. And the way that Bret Stephens copes with this. Remember, Bret Stephens is Bret Bug Stephens. This is a guy, I know I mentioned this last week, who went out of his way to research a George Washington University professor when he said something mean about him on the internet and tried to get him fired. That is cancel culture. Mm-hmm. When the blowback happened, Bret Stephens responded by using every tool in his arsenal, including going on television and using his New York Times article to justify his shitty behavior, and then went off Twitter because he didn't want to deal with all the critics because he's a thin-skinned, smarmy fascist. And everyone knows he is. And he doesn't want to be called that to his face because it's very offensive to him to have his bullshit called out in public. But honestly, my favorite example this week comes from Andrew Sullivan. But it doesn't come from Andrew Sullivan today. It comes from Andrew Sullivan in 2013. Andrew Sullivan loved cancel culture. Back when he was extremely upset with Alec Baldwin, because Alec Baldwin had said a homophobic slur over his shoulder at the paparazzi who was stalking his infant child. And Andrew Sullivan made it his personal mission to get Alec Baldwin fired.
Wait a minute. When you say homophobic, do you mean sea sucker? Is that what you mean?
That's it. Well, first of all, this is when Andrew Sullivan had moved to New York for about a minute and didn't know how New York was.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with being gay.
Well, apparently it does. Because he wrote column after column about the glaring double standard here.
Oh, God.
The double standard. I can't stand that anymore. What a bunch of hypocrites and phonies on that propaganda network, MSNBC. They're mm-hmm. almost as bad as GLAAD, which has finally criticized the bigot, But they went on, he went on and on how there'd be no consequences because the everyone there, Rachel Maddow, Thomas Roberts, remember him? He isn't around anymore. Jonathan Capehart, say nothing about it because they're all hypocrites. And then they fired Alec Baldwin. And Andrew Sullivan reveled in it. You know, he finally, the MSNBC did the right thing. And it would never have been tolerated if directed against any other minority group. And then, very shortly thereafter...
I'm sorry, calling a paparazzi who's bumping into your baby mm-hmm. to get a picture a cocksucker?
Right.
And Andrew Sullivan makes it about being gay in New York City?
Andrew Sullivan hates Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And Andrew Sullivan is looking for a reason to get mad about Andrew Sullivan. This is what I used to call pineapple ice cream conservatism. Mm-hmm. And then I changed it to performative conservatism. This is whatever whim or slight or anger is wafting through Andrew Sullivan's large empty brain today. That is conservatism. Whatever he likes today is conservative. Whatever he doesn't mm-hmm. like today is liberal. And mm-hmm. it changes because his mood changes, but he continues to believe that whatever I happen to like today, whatever I have a taste for today, that's what conservatism means. And of course, Andrew Sullivan stays the hell away from anybody who's ever going to challenge him on his bullshit. But here's the thing. Andrew Sullivan has a friend named Niall Ferguson, who went much, much further in his gay bashing and trying to get people fired and on and on and
right.
on. And Andrew Sullivan rushed to his friend's defense. Sure, it was
because
bad.
Cancel culture is so bad.
He's right that calls for him to be fired are egregious and over the top. Andrew Sullivan says, agreeing with his friend Niall Ferguson. See, here's the thing. It's like in It's a Wonderful Life. I hate to quote Mr. Potter, but you know, if you're a friend of some guy in this place, you can get away with murder. If you're Andrew Sullivan's friend, you never commit any sins. If Andrew Sullivan doesn't like you, you're outside the pale and should be fired. And then when it comes to a conversation about cancel culture, you get this blank hound dog brain dead look on his face. Like, what are you talking about? This is, you know, I'm talking about abstract intellectual concepts, not my own behavior. I'm talking about other people's behavior. Other people need to be judged harshly. Other people need to be held to account for this. Not me, because I'm on the inside. And mm-hmm. that's the problem. It's these clowns. It's these white male privileged assholes who think their privilege is given by God, who are feeling a rising generation of critics nipping at their heels. And they don't fucking like it. And they don't like the fact that people can mobilize against them. They can criticize them. They thought the wall that separated them from professional accountability was absolute. They existed in a walled garden where nothing could ever get in and no one could ever hurt them. They could just shit out whatever stupid ideas they wanted. And as long as the Sulzberger family thought it was okay, or Comcast thought it was okay, or New York Magazine thought it was okay, they'll just keep getting paid for this. And these are all people who've gotten job after job after job after job. Bill Kristol being the worst example. A complete fucking bloodthirsty hack who has never missed a meal in his life. Who should have been fired from this planet 20 years ago. And yet, for some reason, you can never talk about Bill Kristol. You can never fire Bill Kristol. You can never criticize Bill Kristol. He's above it all. And my contention is, if you really want to have a marketplace of ideas, if you really want to be in the arena, then get in the goddamn arena. And there's this protected, walled off, milk-fed group of critics, pundits, who don't want that at all. They want to continue their little cartel of special people.
Well, and
people.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this next generation coming up doesn't have time for their bullshit, and B, they don't have any in to describing or pontificating about Black Lives Matter.
No.
And so their particular opinion about George Floyd is America has a problem.
Right.
You know, this is a humility issue.
America is very angry.
Whatever.
For lots of reasons, none of which right. I'll go into at the moment.
Right, right. And so and my job, speaking as David Brooks for a moment, is to be a general expert on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And rewrite the history of the Republican Party every, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
And they are being, I think there's a threat to their place in the journalistic ecosphere. Is that the right word?
Well, the firmament, or in Valhalla, or in the greater. And because they are at the very pinnacle, they are very privileged people. They're incredibly, and part of their deal is clearly, I don't get criticized by anybody. Nobody's allowed to talk shit about me. Nobody inside my group is allowed to talk shit about us. We are all in this together. We're a club. We're very chummy with each other. This is why the Lincoln lads, the Lincoln Project boys, took off so fast, because they're all friends with everybody in the media. So once Donald Trump took off, as became the candidate and became the president, it would have been very easy for people at the networks and on op-ed pages to find liberals who've been right about the Republican Party all along, to give those people seats at the table, seats on panels, op-ed pages. That never happened. What they did was they found Charlie Sykes and Rick Wilson and gave them those seats, because those people, they knew them already. These are our friends. These are our pals. These are people we spent time in motel rooms with on the campaign trail. And they're not going to have the poor taste to mention that history didn't start in 2016. They won't bring up old shit. We can all agree that everyone here got stuff wrong and no one knows what really happened, and let's just move on. And there was that moment, shit, in probably 2015. I think I wrote a post about it, about cannibals arguing about table manners, where just for a minute, Bill Kristol and Joe Scarborough and his sidekick Mika got into a punching match practically on the set of the Joe Scarborough show, because it was who's to blame for Trump. And Bill Kristol for a half a minute said, well, you have him on the show and you didn't do shit about it. And
Joe Scarborough shout him off.
Nobody's more critical of him than we are. And then Mika was yelling at Kristol, like, it looks like you're going to cry. And it was that moment where you realize, oh, this is a club. This is a clip.
And there are rules on Joe Scarborough's show about talking about his shit.
And those rules apply everywhere. You're not allowed to criticize a fellow club member. And that's what is so terrifying about the internet and blogging and podcasting, et cetera, is that there's a whole bunch of people out here who've been cut out, who truly have been canceled. You want to participate in cancel culture? Be a woman on Twitter.
Be a black woman
on Twitter. Nobody's going to ever hear from you again. Go be Melissa Harris Perry for a day.
Right.
A much less, sort of.
Shirley Sherrod.
Yeah. Or a much less sort of spectacular fall. Be a liberal who wrote about the Iraq war and who wrote about all the people who supported the war, supported Bush, who talked shit about liberals and who were proven completely wrong. And then were given jobs for life in the media, and would really like to know why. Why were those people? Why was the David Frums and the David Brooks and the Bill Kristols given those jobs? And the answer is, dude, it's a fucking business, and you're not, and you are a danger to us, because you come into our midst and start pointing fingers and saying, what about what he said yesterday? What about what he said the day before? And that is not fucking allowed. And we roll merrily on. And these are now the people who've gathered together who are whining that somewhere someone might hold them professionally accountable for some of the shit they said. And there's this one back and forth, I'll leave it at this, from the Bulwark podcast, which I listen to, as you know, as one listens to enemy broadcasts to figure out troop movements and where they plan to deploy and shit like that. And Yasha Munk, who is a American German Jewish political scientist who's very popular on the right now, on the serious conservative right. And this is like a 45-minute podcast. He spent a good chunk of that talking about this terribly sad story about this, I believe, Hispanic gentleman who worked for a power company, who was driving down the street, and he had his window open. He was just enjoying life in America. And he was just driving through the streets of his town in a truck with the window open, and he had his hand out the window, and he was like snapping his fingers or cracking his knuckles or something. And somebody saw him and thought he was throwing white power signs. And so they called the power company and raised a big stink, and this guy was fired. Mm. And that, my friends, is cancel culture.
Yeah.
And you could just hear Charlie Sykes going, we're all that man. No, you're not. You're absolutely fucking not that guy. That guy should get his job back, because that was a dumb mistake. You, Charlie Sykes, have been a right-wing whore on Wisconsin radio for 30 fucking years. You shouldn't have a microphone anywhere. Nobody should be listening to you. The reason they listen to you is because you have friends in the quote-unquote liberal media who will give you pride of place, who will give you a seat at the table, who will let you, who will promote your book, who will give you an op-ed column. And they will never, ever do that for liberals, because liberals would have the bad taste to turn around and say, but you were doing this too.
I want to give a hat tip to my Crooks and Liars colleague, Capper.
Yeah.
Who pointed out, and Charlie Sykes is responsible for Scott Walker, you know, and all the anti-union crap that went on in Wisconsin over the years. Yeah. Oh,
Charlie Pierce and I were comparing, when were you canceled by Charlie Sykes? When were you
canceled? That was big news to me, that Charlie Pierce was blocked by Charlie Sykes. Well, that's something.
It's like Outlander, honey. And there can be only one Charlie. So, and then Capper came in and said, oh, you guys are pikers. He canceled me in the 90s, back when he was campaigning for Walker and the entire state of Wisconsin. But the thing is,
by the way, is a union guy from Wisconsin. So there's a history there. Oh, yeah. God,
yeah. And as stalwart, he's a stalwart ally.
Yes.
But the point being, every one of these assholes has a long, bloody, awful record that in any other profession would completely disqualify them from having the job they have now. Mm-hmm. And the job they have now is a very rare and profitable job. It's a prosperous job. It's an influential job. So why are these people who are distinctly unqualified for this job continually given jobs like this? The people who've been right all along aren't. And the answer is, the people who run the companies don't want the people who are right all along influencing opinions. They want the assholes. And you can infer whatever you want from that. But this idea that now suddenly there's this cancel culture that's going to come from them, make them unhappy by calling them out by, I don't know, rereading shit they said a month ago and saying, remember when you were saying this bullshit about A or B or C? Remember Rick Wilson when you were all for Mitch McConnell stealing the Supreme Court seat? Remember that? Because I do. It's on Twitter. What do you think about that, Rick Wilson? I think you're blocked, Driftglass. Yeah. I think you're blocked.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They don't want to compete. They want to win. And there's a big difference between the two.
I wonder if part of it is watching people who are genuinely racist on Twitter and get caught on video getting fired. Mm-hmm. And it's as if you as a racist white Republican can't say anything you want. And that threatens them.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to that. And so we can't say that.
Mm-hmm. We can't say I see a little bit of myself in crazy doctor lady claiming she can't wear a mask in the grocery store. Right.
We can't make a profound intellectual and moral and philosophical statement about some asshole racist getting fired for being an asshole racist on camera.
Right. Right. So and threatening a woman in Costco. Right.
So
right.
We're going to inflate that into a giant, gassy, cultural thing that's happening to the very best of us, and that's why people are self-censoring and they're not they're not being honest and honorable with their ideas, because there's this big thing that big thing used to be the big sweaty hand of white male privilege pressing down on everybody else. I think it's Zerlina Maxwell, whose book came out this week or last.
This week, right? The End of White Politics, which is directed specifically at liberals.
Yeah.
And good for her. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm quoting her exactly, but it's we've always had identity politics. They were white male identity politics.
And everybody thought that was normal.
We saw this the minute Barack Obama was elected. That's when the right, which was always fucked in the head, went completely screaming, flipped out.
Yep.
Because the proper default setting where I can turn my brain off and not worry about anything is white, conservative, male, Christian. Right. And Barack Obama was not that. And therefore something must have gone terribly wrong with the country. And the idea that, no, the problem is you're a racist is not something we're going to talk about.
It's not the answer they want to hear. Right. You want to quote a couple of last minute quotes from Charlie Pierce?
Oh, sure.
Mark McKinnon is on Morning Joe talking about he and W won in 2000 on a platform of, quote, restoring honor and dignity to the White House.
Yes.
This is Mark McKinnon's history book of his career, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Charlie Pierce says, yes, Cleo, the muse of history, and I are vomiting in impeccable harmony. Yes, I'm sure they are. And then Do we really want to give any attention to Kanye West this week?
Well, we'll give him that professional love bump. That'll put him right over the top. There you go. I'm not sure if you all know who Kanye West is. He's a performer of some kind of music.
He's a singer of music somewhere. Yes.
And his name is now Kanye Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho West, after the president of Idiocracy. Because he announced that he's running for president on the "they're going to use vaccines to put chips in our heads" ticket, which, you know, because we're not crazy enough already.
Speaking of people who already have a chip in their head of some kind, Kanye.
The dude has problems.
Keep the music going, Kanye.
And the odds makers, and by that I mean the people in my head, are like, is this something that Trump slipped him $20 and said, run for president and get the blacks off my back?
The blacks. And Elon Musk said, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's do that.
Who's more expert on them than I am?
Than Elon Musk. Yeah. Yes.
I have to lay down now.
Yeah. Speaking of white guys who think they know way more than they do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a quick news roundup.
All right.
At least 26 members of the Mississippi State Legislature have tested positive for coronavirus.
Yep.
We wish you well, Mississippi State Legislature. Please get well soon.
We would like you to recover from that and then stop being stupid.
Stop being assholes. Yeah. Yeah.
Donald Trump threatened universities' tax exempt status this week. Quote, our children must be educated, not indoctrinated. This is from Twitter. Too many universities and school systems are about radical left indoctrination, not education. Therefore, I'm telling the Treasury Department to re-examine their tax-exempt status. That is straight out of Dinesh D'Souza's filthy little playbook.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
Trump threatened to cut federal funding if schools don't fully physically reopen. Trump, however, lacks the authority to force schools to reopen, and federal funding has already been appropriated by Congress. About 90% of school district budgets are raised by states and municipalities. And honestly, states and municipalities are really up against it this year. The tax receipts are horrible.
They are.
There are going to be cuts. It's going to be bad without federal help. Another reason to vote for Joe Biden.
Yep.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who, by the way, every middle school child knows who Betsy DeVos is. You know why?
Yes, they do.
You know why they do? Radical left indoctrination. That's
right.
Why.
Teachers make sure they know that name.
Teachers make sure that the middle school and above students know who the fucking education secretary is, who doesn't have a book in her office, a book. And runs the education department like a yacht club.
Well, and anyone who's surprised that the babies in cages party is okay with sacrificing the lives of your children.
It is our freedom that allows school shootings to continue.
Yes.
That is, I mean, that the party of school shootings, the party of babies in cages, of course, they don't give a shit about schools spreading the virus.
Or children. They don't give a shit about you. Yeah. Let's face it.
Yep.
On the other hand.
No, Betsy DeVos claimed there is no excuse for schools not to reopen.
Other than massive amount of death and spreading of a plague. Right. On the other hand, the CDC apparently ain't playing no more. They will not revise their guidelines for reopening schools despite pressure from President Stupid and the White House.
And Dr. Anthony Fauci advised states having a serious problem with a surge in coronavirus cases to seriously look at shutting down. Yeah.
Yeah. My sister lives in just outside Prescott. And
Arizona.
Arizona is the now global epicenter for virus spread. And she's
we have relatives in North Florida, too. Yeah. And another hot spot. Yeah.
She's disgusted and just saddened by what was happening in her state. Mm-hmm. And you could see it. I mean, she said, you know, you go out to the town and you just see all these people up from the desert because it's 120 degrees there. This is where they go. They're packed shoulder to shoulder. No one's wearing masks. Everyone's giving people who are wearing masks dirty looks like this is going to be very bad. And now it's very bad. One of the, of course, spinoffs of the COVID-19 and one of the spinoffs of the absolute criminal incompetence of Paul Krugman calls the doom spiral. Of the administration cannot admit it made a mistake. So they keep doubling down on lying, which just makes things worse, which makes them double down more. And they're just going to keep doing that until someone drags them out of fucking office. One of the side effects is another 1.3 million workers filed new claims for state unemployment benefits last week. That's the 14th straight week of declines. More than 48 million people have now filed for unemployment benefits for the first time in the past 16 weeks.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman will retire from the U.S. Army after more than 21 years of military service over a campaign of bullying, intimidation, and retaliation by Donald Trump.
File this under criminal can't stop criming. Michael Cohen has been taken into custody for violating the terms of his early release from prison.
What a dummy. Trump has strongly implied that he's ready to pardon Roger Stone. He needs Roger Stone to tell him what to tweet in all caps through November. That's the deal.
That's the only thing that's going to save him is Roger Stone. And because we haven't screwed up everything about our relationship with the rest of the world completely yet, Donald Trump has officially notified the United Nations that we will withdraw from the World Health Organization in the middle of a global pandemic.
That takes a year. Next year, let's have a new president who won't do that.
Yeah.
Mexico border towns try to stop Americans crossing amid the COVID-19 fears. Mm-hmm. Townspeople have blocked a road to the beach resort popular with U.S. tourists as cases surge in states, including Arizona.
They're building a wall, Blue Gal.
And they're going to build a wall, and Mexico's going to pay for it. Yes.
The president has made this country a shithole country. Currently, Tropical Storm Faye is not expected to make landfall anywhere near Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Why is this interesting? Because Donald Trump says he is canceling his hate rally in Portsmouth due to the storm. And this looks like a job for Sharpie Man.
There is a fun link that everybody should check out. Check out the Canterbury Cathedral YouTube channel.
Yeah.
The photo bombing, video bombing with cats.
It's pretty good.
It's hilarious. There's one that came up this week with the cat Tiger, just hopping up on the table and sticking his paw in the Archbishop's tea milk.
Mm-hmm.
Because they own the place. The four cats at Canterbury Cathedral, they run it, and they get to do what they want.
Yeah.
We did want to recommend that you go and check out. If you Google Cats Canterbury Cathedral, you'll find the ones where the cats have just decided to take over the virtual YouTube service.
Holy water, schmoly water.
Oh, wait, I'm here.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to church. And in local news, we do have a little bit of local news. COVID cases are spiking here locally. There's nothing like Arizona, but it is somewhat alarming nonetheless.
Our Senator, Tammy Duckworth, who rocks, by the way, Tucker Carlson had words to say about her. And as I said on Twitter, Tucker Carlson can keep Tammy Duckworth's name out of his shit-spewing whore mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And Tammy Duckworth just said, why don't you walk a mile in my legs, which she doesn't have because... Right. She's a veteran who lost her legs in serving our country in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Tucker.
Which is one of the long, long, long checklist of things that Tucker Carlson has never done for this country. He is a waste
Carlson.
Of
Carlson. Yeah.
Speaker Mike Madigan, who is a corrupt man. He's a Democrat. He's an Illinois guy. But he did
House Speaker. He's the House Speaker of Illinois. He has been for as long as I've been alive on this earth.
The 1890s, he's been a House Speaker.
That's pretty much it.
And he's in a bit of trouble with the IRS and a bunch of other things. But he's not going
he's
anywhere.
He's not exactly always on the up and up.
No, he's
right?
not. Yeah. And we live in Illinois. We understand these things. But
we
do know
that this is the case. Yes.
He has announced the statue of Stephen Douglas will be removed from the Illinois Capitol grounds. Why? His portrait will also be moved from the House chamber. Madigan cites Douglas's disturbing past as a Mississippi slave owner and his abhorrent words towards people of color. Yeah.
And he is replacing the portrait of Stephen Douglas with a portrait of Barack Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not controversial in the Illinois State House.
No,
not one little bit. Not
where Barack Obama served. There's also a Douglas Street in Springfield. I assume they're going to be changing that at some point. Hmm. I would hope so. That'll be my cause, Blue Gal. I'm going to get very upset. I'm going to take that street sign down. I'm going to be famous. I'm going to
put
cancel
up Black
that.
Lives Matter Boulevard. I think that'd be good.
I really do. I don't have enough paint for that, but I'll do something cool.
We got a robocall from our representative, Rodney Davis, and you listened to the voicemail. I didn't listen to it. Did he tell us how to protest properly like he did on Twitter?
No, his representative mentioned that he is in favor of tax cuts, but he's against Nancy Pelosi and the radical left agenda. So, you know, there's no expense being spared coming up with new messaging for the Illinois Republican Party.
And
in the background, you could just hear a record playing suicide is painless. You know, there's just, oh God, you're all so fucked. I mean, he might keep his job. That's sort of where we live.
But his party is so
deeply screwed. And rightly so. The Republican Party needs to be burned to the ground, and we need to piss on its ashes. And that's the end. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. However,
well, and this is something to think about too, which mm-hmm. is we have to be safe
mm-hmm.
and logical and use science in terms of reopening schools.
Yes.
In a normal year where schools and colleges and universities were reopened, we'd have a huge get out the vote campaign Absolutely. At U of I uh-huh. Champaign-Urbana, which is in our district.
Mm-hmm.
And that could make the difference for Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan to be elected to Congress.
Yep.
If U of I Champaign-Urbana does not reopen, which is likely, mm-hmm. It's going to be a harder climb for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the fact. And that's unfortunate, but I'm not willing to tell people's college kids, given that I have one
right.
at home. No, because we want a Democratic congresswoman right. to have an easier ride of it. We want your kid to risk getting sick. That's not, right. I'll risk getting sick to vote against Rodney right. Davis. Exactly. I'm going to do that.
Right.
But I'm not asking anyone else's kid to do that. No. And that's the difference between the Democratic Party and Donald Trump's party.
Well, and there's Rodney Davis News, which is separate and apart from him being a jerk, which is he voted twice against creating transparency for the PPP program after his family's business received PPP loans.
Yeah. Here's the deal with PPP. I don't have a problem.
No.
With a church or any organization in this crisis who is trying to keep their janitor employed.
Absolutely.
Who's trying to keep their lay secretary getting a paycheck.
I couldn't agree more. Yep.
You know, but yes, there should be transparency, and you should definitely have to account for every dollar that you get to forgive that loan. That yes, 100% of it went to salaries for, you know, non-board members, non-millionaire board members, people who type and clean and do day-to-day work, who need money to pay their rent and mortgage. I'm not picky about that.
No.
But man, the number of billionaires and millionaires who scraped that money up, and because they had connections at the banks and got the money. And this is, as Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan said, these are our tax dollars. This is not Congressman Davis's money. It's not the federal government's money. It's our taxpayer money. Gosh, she sounds like a conservative.
She sounds like a conservative. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, she'll be in favor of unions and manufacturing.
We deserve to know how our taxpayer mm-hmm. money is being spent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And from the Chicago Sun-Times, a split decision in the COVID-19 rulings. This is something we didn't have a lot of time for last week, but we're going to take the time this week. In a downstate lawsuit, State Representative Darren Bailey, Republican of Xenia, Illinois, and his attorneys fought hard to keep in state court that suing the governor to reopen the state. A Clay County judge ruled in favor of the Republican legislature, according to the governor's office, and the ruling will be appealed. According to the order, the judge ruled that the 30 days of emergency powers under the Illinois Emergency Management Agency Act lapsed on April 8th, and any executive orders in effect after that date relating to COVID-19 are null and void. It granted Representative Bailey's request that his complaint be a representative action and apply to all citizens of the state of Illinois.
No.
But according to the governor's office, that provision cannot apply statewide since other circuits have ruled the opposite.
Yeah.
And those rulings are just as valid.
Yeah.
The idea that a piddly Republican legislator would take the energy and time to sue the government,
mm-hmm.
the state government, the governor. This is a purely partisan bullshit thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And he's a hero.
And he's a hero on the right. Yeah.
We're set down here sometime in July, the 26th, I believe, the Million Maskless March.
Oh, God.
These are the same assholes, the same clowns. It's all a conspiracy. It's all a fraud. It's all a lie. And they're unreachable. They're blocks.
I can't wait to see the millions that show up for that.
Well,
there'll be 29 people.
Yeah. And it
and they'll all get sick.
Well, it will correspond nicely with a massive national spike that we're clearly headed for. And I don't know how you cover this story other than...
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. And I'm telling you, you guys.
Oh, God.
You need to go to our website, proleftpod.com, and look at this baby kitty whose eyes just opened.
Oh.
Gosh. This week's internet kitty is Ron. And Ron is short for Rona because he's a little baby kitty who was born during the coronavirus pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And his eyes just opened. And he's just as cute as can be. Ron and his brother Oscar were found out by the side of a house and brought in as little newborn infant kittens. And they were fed every 2 hours around the clock. They responded well to care and started to eat and poop like champs. They're little orange kittens. And as I said, this picture of Ron is the day his eyes opened, and it's clear that a young daughter of the house is holding the little kitten, and she's very proud that she was able to save this little kitten.
Well, the key.
Both of them are so cute.
The key was clearly freshly poured cat food.
Well, you know, freshly poured formula, yeah. And they bottle fed these little baby kittens. As they get older, Ron and Oscar will, of course, eat freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And we just love Ron and his brother Oscar. Good for you surviving all of that, and may you have a comfy, comfy life for the rest of your days.
Mm-hmm.
You can visit Ron, baby Ron, at our Facebook page or website. Really, go look at this little baby kitten. Oh, my goodness.
Come on, you heartless bastards. Get over there and look at this cute kitten.
Look at the baby kitten. And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. There are some people that I owe emails to, and I'm sorry about that. There's just been a lot going on this month. I'm sorry. Hi, Ray. I know I owe you an email. I'll get you one. Other people, too. Everybody out there, I will get you an email as soon
darling,
as I can.
If it's any comfort to you, I am so much worse at this than you are. So.
We're doing a lot around the house, and it's disruptive to our regular scheduled time at the computer. So
let's face it. We start drinking about 1 p.m. and day's over by 2.
Scotch comes out around 12:30. That's not our lifestyle.
That's not our lifestyle, no.
That's not our lifestyle. But at any rate, we want you guys to know we're thinking of you, and sorry that we've been so busy. Hashtag save the post office, and don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job and a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details, both our PayPal and postal address information. And baby kitten Ron.
Baby kitten.
It's all there at proleftpod.com, including merch. There's all kinds of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Shout out. We were able to have coffee with a listener outside last Saturday.
That was so much
in
fun.
In the morning. Yeah. And she wore a Both Sides Don't t-shirt.
Oh, that's so nice.
To the coffee. We were so happy. Thank you very much. It was fun to meet you. Please share our show on social media. And thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties know how to liven up an online mass.
They sure do.
They sure as hell do.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.